Wing TV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Thursday, July 21st, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. We're in a very good mood today. Tomorrow, we take off for Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. On Saturday, we'll be attending the D.C. Truth Emergence at Lafayette Park, right across from the White House. If you're anywhere in the area, by all means, travel up there, say hello to us. So this will be our last show for the weekend. We'll have a new show on Monday again. But we're thinking, what kind of show should we do today for a push-off? And what better idea could there be than 9/11, specifically 9/11 on trial? Now, I know that we've talked that we're not happy with some of the things going on with the organizers here, and we figured we better get this information out here about the controlled demolition, because that's the crux of the entire...
Right, and considering that the sponsors of this event, the people, 911truth.org gatekeepers, are not talking about controlled demolition, which is mind-boggling,
right,
we feel like we should, and we want to keep reinforcing, along with David Ray Griffin, what actually brought the towers down. It wasn't plane impacts, it wasn't fire, it was controlled demolition.
Right. In fact, 911truth.org has a link on their site, mm-hmm. 15 reasons why you shouldn't believe the official story. Not one of those 15 reasons even mentions controlled demolition. So what we're going to do here is we're going to go in and give you a brief overview of 9/11 on trial, and we're proud to say that this book is now going into its fifth printing, so there are people out there that get it and they realize what the crux issue is. So
right, you can't talk about the World Trade Center collapse without discussing controlled demolition.
Yeah.
That's what brought the towers down.
Exactly. So the best place to start, of course, is always at the beginning, and that would be, of course, the government's official story. Now, what do they say happened? Well, they said the two jetliners were deliberately crashed into the World Trade Center towers. A raging inferno resulted, which melted the steel, which made the buildings collapse. In fact, someone that was part of the official story actually said that nothing on Earth could have survived those temperatures.
Yet, most of us have seen the pictures of the woman standing in the hole.
That's right.
Where there was no fire. So obviously the temperatures couldn't have been as high as the government claims they
right.
were.
Right, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But when we did a lot of radio interviews right after this book came
mm-hmm.
out, and people into the shows, what they would call and say, well, why don't you just bring out some physical evidence and prove that it was a controlled demolition? Now, nothing would please us more
right.
than to be able to do that, but guess what?
The government tampered with the crime scene and destroyed it, basically removing the evidence, which was the steel. They only examined 80 pieces
right.
of the steel at ground zero.
Now, check this out. There was 185,101 tons of steel removed from ground zero. And as Lisa said, only 80 pieces of steel was inspected. In fact, the most important thing immediately after the towers fell for the government was to get rid of the evidence as fast as humanly possible. They only spent $600,000 on the investigation,
mm-hmm.
and they wanted this steel so guarded that they actually had GPS tracking devices on the trucks that removed the steel from ground zero and took it to the scrap yards.
Right. And considering that the World Trade Center towers were steel-reinforced structures, it begs the question, why did the steel melt when fire, normal hydrocarbon fire, cannot melt steel? In fact, no steel-reinforced structure has ever totally collapsed in history due to fire.
That's right. Now, what the government wants you to think is that the World Trade Center towers were these weak, flimsy
mm-hmm.
structures. Well, the fact of the matter is that they are some of the strongest structures ever built in the history of the world.
Right.
Each floor was designed to hold 2.6 million pounds beyond its own weight. They're also designed to withstand the impact of a 707, and they had to be rated. Usually, buildings only have to be rated to hold three times their normal load.
These were rated five times.
Five times.
Also, FEMA hides the strength of the core structures, dramatically misrepresenting the primary strength of the towers, which were the steel and concrete core columns, and FEMA has presented them as reduced in size to one-third their actual dimensions, and the cross-bracing core beams were not shown at all on their reports.
Right. Now, to get an idea of how big, how massive these structures were, and I've been in the World Trade Center towers probably 6 or 7 times in my life, if you walk along each side of their base, it's as long as 2/3 of a football field, and inside each floor, each 110-story floor was nearly an acre in size. Most people's yards aren't even that big as the floor area covered inside there. So these were massive structures.
Right. Even reducing them to 60% of their rated strength, it shouldn't have weakened them to catastrophic collapse, because even at 60%, the towers would still be able to support 3 times the weight load.
Yeah. Now, when you think about the planes that hit into the towers, it was localized impact damage. It was kind of like driving a nail into a piece of wood.
Mm-hmm.
So the area of wood where the nail or the spike gets driven into gets damaged.
Right, that's called localized damage,
right.
And that's what the plane impacts caused, localized damage. But the areas around the impact zone were stabilized.
Right.
They were undamaged.
That's right, and Thomas Eagar, who is actually one of the government's big disinfo artists, admitted that the planes did not do enough damage to bring these towers down. This
Correct.
Was also confirmed by NIST, which is the National Institute of Science and Technology. So many different experts have said that it wasn't the impact of the planes
right.
that brought it down. So after that, then they came up with another excuse.
Right, fire.
Jet fuel, right.
Well, jet fuel is refined kerosene. It does not burn hot enough, nor did it burn long enough to melt the steel and cause the collapses.
Right. Actually, after the planes impacted the towers, all of the jet fuel burned off within the first 1 to 2 minutes. That's
mm-hmm.
it, 1 to 2 minutes. And if you remember the South Tower, that was the second tower that was hit. When the plane hit it at an angle, about 90% of the jet fuel actually exploded outside
Correct.
Of the building. That's the big fireball that you saw.
Right. So we know that these fires were going out also because of the big plumes of thick black
mm-hmm.
smoke that were emanating from the towers. Black smoke indicates an oxygen-starved
right.
fire. Oxygen is a necessary component of a hydrocarbon fire. Without it, the fire will not burn. There will be no fire.
Right. And if you watch videotapes of the morning of 9/11, when the South Tower was impacted, that was 16 and a half minutes after the North Tower was hit. You'll notice that already the fire is out on the North Tower. So within 16 and a half minutes, already the fire is gone. All you see is black smoke. Also, let's get into the temperatures. Let's get into the physics of fires. We know that construction-grade steel melts at a temperature of 2,795 degrees. And the maximum temperature that jet fuel can burn at is 1,517 degrees.
No, actually, it's the maximum burning jet fuel. Maximum temp of burning jet fuel is approximately 1,800 degrees. The maximum temperature of a hydrocarbon fire
mm-hmm.
is 1,517 degrees
right.
Fahrenheit.
Yeah. And if you look at videos of the South Tower, the second tower that was hit, you'll notice that the fire didn't even spread across the
right.
entire floor where the impact
right.
was. It stayed localized to just one corner. That's how small. See, they want you to believe that these were big, raging infernos.
Right.
But in actuality, they were very small, dwindling fires.
Right. They were not spreading. Heat was not accumulating. It was ventilating. There were many broken windows. So heat wasn't building up. The fires were not burning uniformly, and the damage wasn't uniform. It was asymmetrical damage, because remember that the hits, the impacts from the planes on each tower were different.
Mm-hmm.
One was perpendicular to the core, the other hit almost parallel to the core in an oblique hit.
Right. So how hot did the fires actually burn on the morning of 9/11? Well, to answer that question, we have an entire chapter devoted to a study done by the Vancouver Independent Media. And they did page after page of calculations, physics, very in-depth material, probably the most complicated chapter of the whole book. And they arrived at a conclusion that the fires on each floor of each tower, the maximum temperature they could have reached was 536 degrees.
Correct.
That's it. So let's do a little calculation here. The melting point of steel is 2,795 degrees. The highest the temperatures got inside the towers from the fire was 536 degrees. So that leaves a variance of 2,259 degrees. That's only 19% of what was needed to melt that steel.
Now, a lot of people have said, well, but elasticity and plasticity played a part in this. Well, elasticity is the point at which the steel becomes elastic and bends, and you need a temperature of 1,022 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, we never achieved that internal temperature, as he just explained to you. Plasticity is when the steel becomes permanently deformed, and you need a temperature of 1,320 degrees Fahrenheit for that to be accomplished. We also didn't see internal temperatures of that extent either.
We saw a temperature of 536 degrees, and Thomas Eagar, who we mentioned before, said that for to make these towers collapse, you would have had to have temperatures about 80% of that 2,795 degree. Well, these fires only got up to 19%. It's physically impossible for the jet fuels to bring those towers down.
In experiments that were done in England, Japan, Australia, and the United States, the maximum temperatures of hydrocarbon fires reached in these on steel structures was only 680 degrees Fahrenheit, and those were less protected steel structures than the World Trade Center towers. So the government's story just absolutely does not hold up.
Right. To show how big their lies were, the day after 9/11, there was an article in the BBC, and it said that the fires were so hot inside these towers that molten steel actually poured out over the sides of the towers.
Right.
Now, how hot do you need to get steel to turn it into molten steel?
Well, to liquefy steel, you need a temperature of 5,182 degrees Fahrenheit. So now you're talking about an even wider variance.
So we're only talking about 10% there. The most it could get was 536 degrees. To make it molten steel is 5,182 degrees. They're lying through your through their teeth about everything. Even the aluminum on the outside of the towers, the aluminum casing, it takes a temperature of what? 1,148 degrees. The aluminum didn't even melt, let
aluminum
alone the steel.
Aluminum has a lower melting threshold than steel. If the aluminum casing didn't melt, why would the steel melt?
Exactly. And to test this, everybody out there could test this themselves. Get an acetylene torch sometime, fill it up with jet fuel, and then go and try to cut steel. You'll be there until the end of the world trying to cut this steel because jet fuel won't melt the steel. It's impossible, again. You know. So let's also look at the impact, Lisa, when the planes hit. The South Tower actually started to tip over, didn't it?
Yes. It started to tip over 23 degrees past vertical to the east and should have kept going in that direction and ended up toppling alongside the building on the ground next to the tower. But instead, it stopped tipping. Some greater opposing energy force stopped the tipping. It found its vertical integrity and then collapsed straight downward.
Well, what happened was the bottom dropped out.
Right.
If this was tipping to the side, the bottom dropped out, so this came down right in its own footprint. And another explanation that could have been used for this that the government threw out, you notice that they start saying it was a jet impact, then it was the fire, then they came up with something called the pancake theory, where they said, oh, every floor just pancaked down on the other. Well, to do this, you would have had to have every bolt and every connection break at the exact same time in perfect symmetrical unity for this to happen.
Now, and we're talking about all the floors beneath the impact zone that were stabilized and undamaged. So how is this possible, especially since the lower portions of the tower below the impact zone were stronger than the upper portions?
You had 236 exterior columns, 47 interior or core columns, and there that would have meant tens of thousands of volts and connections would have all had to break at the exact same time.
Yeah, simultaneously.
To have this symmetric collapse. And we know that the fire and the impact were asymmetric. So asymmetric damage cannot produce a symmetrical collapse. It's physically impossible.
Right, and since the only forces up there to act upon this cap, supposedly, was gravity, it should have kept going in the same direction.
Right.
Something acted as a torque to stop that tipping. And the core columns were disintegrated from the bedrock. They were shattered from beneath the ground, and the only thing that can do that would be a much, much stronger energy source.
Right. Now, as we mentioned earlier about the fire, Lisa said that no steel building in the history of the world has ever collapsed due to fire. Well, in this book, we bring up examples of that. One is the first Interstate Bank in Los Angeles, which burned out of control for 3.5 hours. Guess what? It didn't collapse. Also, there was the One Meridian Plaza fire in Philadelphia in the early 90s. This raged out of control for 18 hours, still stood. And then just this year, in March, there was a fire in Madrid. I'm sure everybody remembers that. It burned for 2 days out of control. It's still standing. Now, let's look at how long the towers burned. The South Tower fell only 56 minutes after it was hit.
Correct.
And the North Tower stood for 102 minutes after it was hit. And these were minor, dwindling fires that were virtually insignificant. You can't even cook a turkey in 56 minutes. But they want us to believe that these towers fell down that quickly? Again, physically impossible.
Correct. Also, let's talk a little bit more about gravity. It cannot alter a building's direction in mid-flight and then cause it to explode without an external impetus. Think about that. So some other form of energy was used to break up the towers before they started to fall.
Well, and since Lisa mentioned gravity, let's look at the free fall, the time that it took the buildings to fall. Now, this is a very simple formula. You can determine how long it takes a structure to fall if there's no resistance whatsoever. The formula is T equals the square root of 2H divided by G. Very simple. Anyone that takes Physics 101 knows this formula. Well, the towers were 1,360 feet tall. So if you put the numbers into that formula, you determine that if there's no resistance whatsoever, these towers should have fell in 9.2 seconds. Well, guess how long it took the towers to fall? Approximately 10 seconds. That means that if you were standing on top of the towers at the moment that they started to fall and you dropped an apple over the side of the building, this apple would have hit the ground at the same exact time as your feet, which was falling through the building.
Correct. Now that defies Galileo's law of falling bodies, which is widely accepted science all over the world. The floors should have provided tremendous amounts of resistance, served as a brake to slow the fall. But the rubble that was falling never actually touched the floors below, which were exploded out at a progressively faster and faster rate. The rubble above never impacted with the floors below until it hit the ground.
Right. So what you have now, just to give you an idea of what you were falling through and what provided no resistance, there was 200,000 tons of steel in each tower. There was 425,000 cubic yards of concrete. There was also all the walls and desks and computers and equipment inside these buildings. Each tower weighed 1 billion pounds. So that means that falling through a billion pounds of mass, your feet are still going to hit the ground at the same time as an apple dropping through the air with no resistance whatsoever.
Except for air resistance.
Yeah.
So what you have, barring demolition, you have 1,000 vertical feet of intact structure, which should have served as a brake to slow the fall. You know, and it didn't. It didn't. All that they met was air resistance coming down.
Yeah, and there's so many other things. We're not going to be able to get to them all today, but you have the exploding concrete.
Right.
Which is unbelievable.
Pulverized.
You had 425,000 cubic yards of concrete, and witnesses at ground zero, after the towers fell, said they couldn't even find one block of concrete. Everything was pulverized into a fine micron powder.
You'd need a much, much stronger energy source to pulverize concrete, and that's what is used to do that is explosives. Gravity does not also eject objects outward with force.
And again, you can test this for yourself. Walk up on a 2- or 3-story building and take a cinder block with you and drop it down over the side. What will happen is it will break into pieces. And then get a jackhammer and try to pulverize this into powder. What the jackhammer will do is it will break it into small pieces, but it won't pulverize it. So what kind of force was used to turn this concrete into fine dust? Well, we know. We know what that is. It was, all you have to do is look at 7 stories below street level of the World Trade Center towers. What did we find there?
Well, we found molten steel seven stories below in an oxygen-starved environment. And the fires were burning below the rubble, beneath the rubble. And they burned for approximately 100 days.
Yeah, 4 to 5 weeks that they were burning underneath there. This was with water cannons on them and so forth. How can you get molten steel 7 stories below street level, burning at 5,182 degrees,
right,
5 weeks after this event happened.
When accepted science, proven science, shows that a hydrocarbon fire does not burn without oxygen and cannot burn hot enough to melt steel. So how does the government explain this? The government doesn't even try to.
Right.
All the images that are available show that the outer core structure was mechanically destroyed versus a thermal collapse.
Mm-hmm. And we already determined that the highest temperature that these fires got within the structures was 536 degrees, yet 7 stories, and that was, 80 stories up into the air. These fires went out within the first couple minutes. How can you get something burning over 5,000 degrees 7 stories below street level? It obviously wasn't created by these minute jet fuel fires,
right,
up there. So some other source of energy was underneath there, which toppled the tower. It was a controlled demolition.
Another thing to take note of were the seismic spikes that,
yep,
were recorded at Palisades that indicate huge bursts of energy shook the ground prior to each collapse. So before the buildings even hit the ground, these seismic spikes were recorded, and they're indicative of the huge explosions that occurred beneath the ground 7 stories,
right,
below.
And also we give many different references to expert testimony and also eyewitnesses from different news organizations,
right,
that described explosions inside the building.
Correct.
And this seismographic data comes from Columbia University's, mm-hmm, Lamont Doherty Observatory.
Also, so, no natural earthquakes were reported in Manhattan on the morning of 9/11. So we've ruled out natural causes altogether.
Right. Lastly, David Ray Griffin, not in this book, this is the New Pearl Harbor, but in a subsequent book, gives 10 reasons why it was a controlled demolition. It's fantastic. And last but not least, there's WTC-7.
Correct. Wasn't even hit by a plane whatsoever.
355 feet away from the World Trade Center towers, North and South towers, there was one very minor fire on the 12th floor of this structure. It was so small that Eric Hufschmidt said you probably could have roasted marshmallows over it. Larry Silverstein said the building was pulled, and at 5:20 in the afternoon, 5:20 in the afternoon, a 42-story steel structure.
Right. So remember,
pancakes to the ground.
No steel-reinforced structures ever totally collapsed due to fire. Jet fuel cannot burn hot enough or long enough to melt steel. Hydrocarbon fires don't burn hot enough to melt steel. So what we have 3 buildings controlled by the same group on the same site collapsing within hours of each other on the same day, and no steel-reinforced structure before or since has ever collapsed totally due to fire. The government is lying.
That's right. It was a controlled demolition, and we're going to see for ourselves now how many individuals at this rally Saturday afternoon at Lafayette Park are going to talk about controlled demolition. Because, folks, right here, 9/11 on trial, this is the crux, core issue of the World Trade Center collapse.
It would be impossible for us to recount for you every chapter of this book. There's no unimportant piece of information in this book. We urge everybody to either get it or read it for free, listen for free on our website,
right,
and come to your own conclusions. Look at it really objectively and closely, and you see there's no way the government version can possibly stand up to science and common sense.
That's right. We tapped into 48 of the best researchers in the world. We can't thank them enough,
right,
and we also can't thank everybody out there that has purchased this book and has seen the truth for themselves. So we're going to report back to you,
right,
on Monday.
We can't have a full and honest discussion and an accurate discussion about 9/11 World Trade Center collapses without talking about the crux of the issue, which is controlled demolition. That's what brought the towers down.
Everything else exists on the periphery.
Correct.
We'll be back on Monday. Keep your eyes open, folks, because there is a lot going on.
See you Monday.